Blog Talk Radio.
In Much Less Detail, the podcast, Wednesday night, September the 11th, 2013. I'm Dre, he is Jay. We are coming in to review a little bit of the week one action in the NFL. And Jason, I don't know how much reviewing I can do because I lost every single game to you that we had heads up. So maybe I should just lay out and let you do the whole review yourself.
Well, that wouldn't be much fun, but I will say, though, with dealing with these against the spread picks like we do, it could very easily go the other way. It's just it's so interesting to watch as these games all come down to the wire, and I realize that, you know, it's just winner after winner after winner after winner coming in, that, you know, a penalty here or a missed field goal or a team that needs a field goal for me to win the pick, then would go in and get a touchdown. Just those little differences. And that's, you know, why I explained in the recap post for week one why we stopped doing straight-up picks, because straight-up picks was – it only took us 2 or 3 years to figure out that it was just way too easy. So just the randomness of everything that can happen here. But, again, in all the years we've been doing this, we've never seen – anything this lopsided. I know we texted each other back and forth over the weekend as all these picks were going my way, and it was just it. When it got into Monday, it almost felt like a foregone conclusion that I was just going to win those two games too. And sure enough, it just kept going. But the fun thing is week two is always the great equalizer, isn't it?
It didn't seem like a foregone conclusion to me. I was going into those Monday games thinking, all right, I got two I can get. I can salvage two. We can do this. And then it kind of went to hell. I don't know. It was definitely one of those weeks. Not like what we've ever had before. We've had weeks where one of us wins like five of the six, or, you know, four of the five that we differ on or something like that. But like you said, it was unusual that we differed on that many to start out the season. And then I wound up losing every last one of them to you except for a push where the Bears had to come from behind and force that. All I can say is I got a few excuses. I got a few reasons for why that happened. So I'll just put them out there. It's because you put the much less detail in much less detail, as you already said before. So you did it with no research. You just called it like you saw it, and that's how it happened. So that's one excuse I can go to. Another excuse I can use is, I know you might deny it, but I checked some sources, and it's true. You're petitioning the NFL to go back to the game film and find a way to get an obscure penalty so that the Bears can get an extra point added to their score so you can win that pick too. I know you're trying to get another one, make it 10-0, but I don't think it's going to happen. And my last excuse, what can I say? Miley Cyrus. She gets blamed for everything, so that's my last excuse. Just blame Miley Cyrus for everything. It's all her fault.
Well, that makes sense, though. I mean, it really is. I mean, global warming, oddly enough, today's 9/11. Just blame it all on Miley Cyrus, right? Might as well.
She brought the towers down and everything else, yes. So what stood out to you about week one for these crazy results that we had? You know, besides the fact that Jacksonville is the worst team in the world and I'm a complete moron for picking them.
Well, I didn't want to bring that one up right away, but that, yes, I don't think the Chiefs are not that great, but yes, the Jags are that awful. I know,
but I have to bring that one up. That's the one you laughed in my face when I picked it. So I have to bring that up.
Sure,
you knew that was complete crap the moment I picked it. So you nailed a lot of stuff, but you nailed that one completely.
I even went off the script to just go right out and tell you the Jags are complete shit. And sure enough, that was absolutely true. No, I was proud of the fact, even though it's week one, I have already proclaimed the team to be done, being Pittsburgh. Wow, is that a train wreck. And then they lose. Then they lose their center. They lose Marquise Pouncey, clearly their best offensive lineman. And that team does not look the same to me. They lost to a very substandard Tennessee squad, not a very good team. And you told me you listened to it firsthand, and it was probably infuriating to listen to. First, knowing that you had the Steelers, but just to watch a team that was such a powerhouse in the league to go to just garbage, just a shell.
I forget how many rushes exactly that Tennessee had, but they ran the ball. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 42, 43 times. Tennessee just kept running the ball and running the ball. Not that they were having a lot of success running the ball, but what else can you do against Pittsburgh? You're not going to throw over the top. Jake Locker doesn't have that kind of repertoire. He also doesn't have those kind of weapons. So they just kept sledgehammering away, putting up almost no points. They won 16-9. And, yeah, I just kept waiting for Pittsburgh. Okay, any day now, Big Ben turns it on, goes downfield, does his thing, and he kept getting sacked. They kept messing around. The run game was atrocious. That's pretty much the biggest thing that stood out to me this weekend, not necessarily Pittsburgh, but a lot of teams. Boy, bad blocking just will torpedo any plans you have. All these offensive plays, whether it's Chip Kelly or any other coordinator, they're designed to work, but you have to block them. And that's why I was against the Bears, because they have spent all these years not blocking guys. The last several years, they've been terrible trying to block up any of their plays. And look at the difference blocking makes. All they had to do was block some guys, and they come away with a victory over a pretty good Bengals team. So that's what pretty much stood out to me for the most part, was just you have to find guys to block for you, or else you're not going to be able to pull off anything in the NFL. That's just how it is. But you were saying that you found a new stupidest team in football that you'd like to crown.
I did. I would like to proclaim the new stupidest team in football. We normally reserve that for the Detroit Lions, who tried.
They didn't give up their crown necessarily. Yeah. Ndamukong Suh set out to defend that title first game out of the bat.
Yes, he did. Currently, and this kind of carries back to last year a little bit, we've seen the stupidity on the rise with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Wow. How can you lose a game by just jacking up the opposing team's quarterback, basically Clay Matthews style? They didn't come jumping from out of the screen 5 yards out of bounds.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that bad. He didn't lariat him like Clay Matthews did.
But yeah. I watched that play happen live against Geno Smith. And, instantaneously, you knew it was a flag. So it wasn't even just a questionable borderline thing, because I'm watching that game, I'm like, oh, that's a flag. You know, obvious. But how dumb can you be to put a team in field goal range with no time remaining on a late hit out of bounds? And he wasn't trying to get more yardage. He was just trying to stop the clock and get out of bounds so he could do a desperation heave, just anything to try to get them to win that game, and they basically just hand it to them on a silver platter. And then I coupled that up, of course, I referred to it on the blog, with the Greg Schiano blowing up the kneel downs last year that they tried a couple of times, and that is a team that was supposed to be some hot shit the last couple of years and managed to just remove the hot. So, just terrible.
There's a lot of teams that have discipline problems with things.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. You get all that testosterone built up, and you go out there, and you got roided up troglodyte running around trying to clothesline quarterbacks out in San Francisco. You know, now that's pretty dumb, too. How are you going to talk shit all week about how you're going to smack the quarterback and bust him in the fucking mouth, and then you go out there and you can't do it on the field, so you're going to run after him and do it when he runs out of bounds? like way out of bounds, like past the white chalk out of bounds. That's pretty bad too. And
that's the
another
one
thing that
thing.
stood out to me is
What's
that
that?
when Clay Matthews, when he's playing like that, and Green Bay's defense is, you know, has a chance to actually do something because he's causing so much havoc. The fact that Green Bay got that game out of Clay Matthews and they still found a way to lose, like I said on the blog, that's pretty scary because he hasn't been putting those games together consistently. He used to do it all the time a couple of years ago, and that's pretty much a big reason why the Packers won the Super Bowl that year. But ever since then, he's been quite inconsistent, and that should be a worry for the Packers that they got that crazy game out of him and he still managed to find a way to lose.
Yeah, the thing I didn't understand about the Packers' game plan was they were all the week long before the game, and probably all preseason and all off season was we're gonna hit Kaepernick. You know, we're gonna when he pitches the ball or he gets out in space, we're gonna put some hats on him. We want him to know we're there. You know, we're gonna inflict a little pain on this guy. And then their defensive game plan was to force him to pass from the pocket. I mean, if you want to hit this guy, put him in positions to run the ball. I mean, sure, he torched you doing that last year, but you were supposed to be ready for it. And he was obviously showing you that he was capable of throwing from the pocket. Their best bet, if they wanted to put some hats on him and put a little fear in him, was make him uncomfortable in the pocket. They couldn't do that. And also, they play RG3 this week, which I pointed out last week. So now they get to do this again, although RG3, as we saw on Monday night, doesn't quite have that mobility back yet. So might be a little easier road to hoe for the Packers this week. Don't want to let on to my pick or anything, but
yeah, we'll see. You never know.
We might need to make these 30-minute shows because look at that, we're almost done.
It's time to pick the Thursday night game. Yeah, we're running out of time already. Rookie quarterbacks, another big story from week one, where Geno Smith and E.J. Manuel put on some performances and covered the spreads, and of course, in Geno Smith's case, won the game. So Geno Smith and the Jets now travel up to Foxborough, Massachusetts. They will find the New England Patriots and Tom Brady waiting for them. The Jets are plus 12, a 12-point underdog at the Patriots. Jason, who you got?
Well, that's a big number. I'm going to take the Patriots. I'm going to give the big points this week. I figure that the Jets are nowhere near as good as they showed against Tampa, although Tampa basically just handed them the game on a silver platter. I think the Patriots are better. I mean, they played at Buffalo, which is always a tough place. You and I were actually both tempted to take Buffalo, which was the distressing thing. I don't want to get greedy, but we both liked that number, and we went against our original gut instinct. But I figure that's at least good enough for a touchdown both directions for the Patriots above and for the Jets below. So I'm going to call it as a 14-point game. I'm going to take the Patriots here, 27-13.
And we're going to go differing once again. I'm going to go ahead and back the rookie quarterback, I guess, which I should have done this past Sunday. And I'm going to go ahead and take the Jets to cover that spread. And I'd like New England to put up the points anyway. I know they're going to be missing Danny Amendola. Rob Gronkowski's still out. Shane Vereen had a wonderful game Sunday. He's not going to be there. I just think Tom Brady is going to open up and find some new weapons. There's going to be some guys catching balls you never heard of in this game. And I don't think the Jets are going to be able to hang with them as far as winning the game. But Geno Smith seemed to have poise. He seemed to know what he was doing. I'm going to go ahead and call him to cover that number. I'll take it Patriots 34-23. A little bit of an up and down, back and forth affair. So that's going to do it for our little Wednesday night show here. I have a few seconds to get our plugs out, so I'm going to try to rush and do them as quick as I can. Follow our picks on the blog in muchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Email us in muchlessdetail@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. I am at IMLDGray, and Jason is at IMLDJTG. I need to give credit for this theme song that you don't seem to like, and neither does anyone else. So I'll probably change it before the show on Saturday. We keep doing these shows, and I keep forgetting to give the credit. The song is called Going Down by an artist named Orbeek, and I found the song on Free Music Search. Freemusicarchive.org is where I searched that out. But we'll probably find something else by the weekend, because that doesn't seem to be the most popular song. So for the last time, we'll go ahead and have them play us out. He's Jay, I'm Dre. We thank you for tuning in, getting our Thursday night pick. We'll see you Saturday night, where we'll have all of week two's picks ready to go, and we'll see if I can possibly do better than 3-12 this week. Thanks for tuning in. See you Saturday, folks.